Hello and welcome back to the IMD Podcast Network. Today, we're bringing you an interview between IMD Professor Jaike Lee and Marcus Schindler, the former leader of Novo Nordisk's R&D organization. Their discussion centers around driving innovation through transformation.
Hello, I am Jaike Lee, Professor of Leadership and Organizational Behavior at IMD Business School. Today, I'm joined by Marcus Schindler. Since joining Novo Nordisk in 2018, Marcus has led a tremendous discovery journey of innovation and the transformation. So today, we are going to actually to hear from Marcus because he is on the journey to continue this discovery and leading global talents of more than 2,000 people. So welcome, Marcus. Welcome to IMD. In fact, actually, welcome back to IMD.
Thanks for having me. Really pleasure.
It's so excited. But I would love us to rewind time a little bit. When you first joined Novo Nordisk in 2018, what actually really attracted you to the place?
So I was really attracted by, first of all, this real strong purpose of the company. It is a foundation-owned company with the intent really to serve millions of patients with serious chronic diseases, in particular diabetes, and maybe more known today even in obesity, but also cardiovascular disease, renal disease, and also some rare diseases. And that is actually rather compelling. It is also very focused, unlike some of our peer companies who are very diverse in their approach. It is a very focused approach, but I thought, at that stage of career, I was actually very curious to see, you know, how I could impact with the experiences I brought to the table from other peer pharma companies, but also having worked in smaller biotech companies, for example. So what was the impact I could actually make into this organization? What could I learn as a leader joining such an organization?
Thank you, Marcus. This is such an important topic we are covering, right? Because Novo Nordisk has been known for a purpose-driven company. So you actually dive into this topic right in. So thank you for that. I'm actually curious. You have your vision of this purpose-driven company. How did you actually communicate and inspire your other people, your people, to continue this purpose-driven business?
So first of all, I would say is to create clarity what the overall company purpose then means for a research and early development organization. So how does that actually then translate into the scientific discoveries, the innovation level, and actually how we show up doing our daily work? And to that end, actually, I started by setting out aspirations. And aspirations aren't goals. They are sometimes unattainable, but they give you the direction of travel. They also help you to stretch yourself. And obviously, I also joined not just to continue manage an existing business in Novo Nordisk that had been going on for decades or actually close to a century, but actually to help, well, prepare the company better for the future. And on a good day, I would say, helping to shape the future that we would be in. And articulating those aspirations, showing where we could be going, both to be sustainable, to continue to be successful in years or decades to come, and then also to try to make that concrete, I think helped to get overall buy-in into this journey.
Yeah, I would love to be on your team, right? To hear exactly how you articulate that purpose. And also you have done a lot within very short time span. So my question for you is that if you actually choose one word to describe your actually transformation journey at Novo Nordisk, what would that word be and why?
Probably I would choose exploration, because exploration for me also symbolizes the going into the unknown. And that for me is and was a big theme from a world, also a scientific world, where Novo Nordisk has been extremely good and successful is solving problems that we could articulate, making better insulin molecules, making better treatments for obesity, to also a world where less is known. How do we actually work with novel target molecules in the body? How could we work with different technologies? How would we work with external innovation? So all of that needed exploration, ways to find out how we would do this, whether we would like to do it, whether we would like to continue for it. And I think that is also a very personal word for me, because it's very true to my nature to actually going beyond what is known today. And hence, I think it's probably a fitting word for this.
Yeah. Wonderful. I love that, right? To explore. And you also highlight that because of the very nature of exploration, which means that you and your team have to deal with a lot of unknowns. So my question for you is that how you actually strike the balance is, on the one hand, you as the EVP and the Chief Scientific Officer, you have this performance, the core, to actually deliver. But on the other hand, all this inspiration and the passion, and would love to hear about how you strike that balance.
Yeah, I think it's both a balance, a duality, and sometimes also a tension, right? I think all three are true. But first and fundamentally, I would say, as any leader, to gain trust and credibility, you need to have your house in order. Yeah, you need to be credible and measurable on some of the here and now. Yeah, because that is also actually for us the ticket to ride into the future. If there's no today, there won't be a tomorrow. Right? And whilst we might all be excited about what is yet to come, we also need to take care that we deliver into today's business. So I think knowing your core, deploying resources and capabilities towards this is really important. And then it becomes an and with capital letters, that you do both, you execute or exploit and you explore. Yeah, so you deploy then capabilities and capital towards something that is less known. And one thing that is really important for me that I've learned over the years is not to confuse risk with unknown. Because unknown things are simply unknown. We don't know whether they're risky. And gradually, in my world, through experimentation, we turn things from unknown to more known. And that actually, for me, is the core business, that nature reveals itself through experimentation. And through this, we're actually de-risking our journey as we go along.
Thank you so much, because really you actually highlight a few key leadership principles. And now I would love to dive into some specific concrete examples, because you have done a lot since you become the lead in the R&D function at Novo Nordisk. And you actually help build the global presence for Novo Nordisk. So how about actually share a little bit about, for example, you have those very specific initiatives. You actually help Novo Nordisk put the global presence on the radar screen.
No, happy to do this. And I think when I started, obviously, I saw an organization that had a strong presence, in particular in Denmark, where our heritage is, and we're very proud, and it's been incredibly successful. It also had credible output and outcomes on some core technologies to actually make some of the best molecules in our industry. And that, I think, is the backdrop when I came in to say, okay, and how can we actually equip ourselves with additional tools to make even better medicines, or actually make totally different medicines that we have today? So experimenting on, I would call it, the toolbox that we have available, not just proteins and peptides, also what we call small molecules and other drug formats. Because at the end of the day, many patients do not care about what the medicine really is. As long as it works for them, they can get it, they can afford it, they can take it. Yeah. So that's one thing. And how do you get to this? Well, working also with partners. Whilst I have, as you said, 2,500 scientists in the organization, the world is so much larger, immense level of external innovation. So opening up our lens to partner, and there are different ways how you can partner on all the things we're curious about, and then we can decide on how much we would like to engage. And then, as you mentioned, the global presence becomes somewhat of a consequence, but also a facilitator, because it's a bit harder to direct all of this from a singular place. Yeah, so we build a deliberate presence in particular in the US, but also in the UK, in Oxford. So we are very strong in Boston now, but we also have sites in the Bay Area and so forth, to be present, use the local talent base, which also actually helps us, frankly, to get a more diverse, you know, more deliberate workforce with different experiences and both cultural and scientific backgrounds. So all of those things actually come together, and all of them are equally important in this way to drive a broader and better innovation space.
That yeah, I feel that you really help build the very healthy, you know, very actually, I would use this organic ecosystem for the R&D and for Novo Nordisk. And if I may follow up with, right, we talked multiple times to talk about it, you have been very intentional in terms of where you want Novo Nordisk to have a presence in which area. Would you mind, maybe let's just use Boston as example. How did you choose Boston to be one of the major innovation hub for you to focus on?
But I just maybe to take one step back, and I think it is fundamentally important that there are lots of things you can explore and you can get excited about. So I think it is very important to have a framework that you want to operate in, right? To also decide, when we talk about a global footprint, does it truly mean the globe? Or what are we actually trying to solve for when we say global footprint? And one of the key elements I was trying to solve for was innovation space. And then actually you can make a lot of analysis, and others are doing this, to say, where does the best innovation happen today? Which is one interesting angle, but then actually even more important, where is it most likely to happen tomorrow and day after tomorrow as well? And by all intents and purposes, the Boston area, or Cambridge in particular, is the area where we believe for the foreseeable future we will see more and more innovation coming out. And why is that? Because it's not only outstandingly good academic research that is incredibly networked, but I would say integrated in this is also a strong entrepreneurial spirit. Nearly everybody at Harvard or MIT or, you know, other institutions is also an entrepreneur. So they start to work not only with science, but with science with a purpose. Yeah. And that's exactly that is important for us. Yeah. And of course, it is a global hub, yeah, you know, for talent to go to. So this is where we went first to participate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned ecosystem. Now we're actually on, I would say, the next stepping stone, where we no longer just want to participate, but we want to actively shape the ecosystem. So how can we now influence, actually this one, influence that the science that happens there, the startup companies are working in a space that is relevant to us?
So well, that's exciting. Thank you. Yeah, it is very exciting. And Marcus, I want to follow up, right? Because even this conversation, the way we're going, still fundamentally has come back to the core questions that is connected to the purpose. So my actually question, and also curiosity, is that at your position, it must be constantly, you mentioned that tension, but hopefully integration. So my question is that you know that there is one part of it is the fundamentally, it is the purpose of a business. But on the other hand, you actually, as a well-trained scientist, you also know that you are on a mission to seek truth, as you mentioned multiple times. So is how did you integrate, or how you actually really make sure that there is a potential synergy of this tension or integration? Would you mind to share some thoughts on
that? No, thanks for that great question. And you're right. I often say that scientific discovery is about truth seeking and truth finding. So we put out a hypothesis, and then that hypothesis might be right or wrong, proven, you know, correct or false. Of course, in a commercial entity, you need to have success, right? At the end of the day, we would like to discover and develop medicines. Otherwise, we're just a university. Where we, you know, pile up general knowledge, which of course is also important. I think it's a very important narrative that I try to convey is that out of this, well, fundamental scientific curiosity and then the mindset to seeking truth, you will become better at discovering drugs. So I try to articulate this core belief that you're doing better science and more purposeful science when you actually believe you're designing your trials in such a way or your earlier experimentation. So of course I need to ensure that I get buy-in into this core belief. And why do I say this? Because I fundamentally think that if you're starting to bias your system or if you're seeking only milestone progression or only those results that serve you, you risk the temptation to maybe forget about some side effects or some things that, you know, maybe are being pushed to the side. And in our business, nature will prevail. Those things will come back to haunt you in later trials when you're serving thousands or one day maybe millions of patients. So my value proposition, if there is something we need to understand, if there's something where we need to find a real good understanding of opportunity versus risking our medicines, the earlier we can find this, the better. Because then we can decide it is too risky or it, you know, might not be a good idea. If you see this only in a very late trial or once the medicine has launched, this is both a very risky, you know, and potentially even dangerous place to be. So that's the value proposition I put forward. When we talk about failure, fail early, fail cheap.
I really love the attitude and also the value proposition you highlight. It's about the truth seeking. And my question for you is that, you know, for you probably coming naturally, for your team, for your people, when they actually in the heat of a moment have a lot of temptation, you know, a lot of growth, a lot of momentum, how do you actually really make sure that they are still come back to these fundamentals?
Yeah, that's, I think, an ongoing challenge for any leader, right? But then also, you know, that is the big task. How do you, you know, actually empower people to do their job, how they translate what you would like to achieve into their day-to-day working? And one of the things I'm very deliberate and thoughtful of is how can I convey intent? So we're not just chasing, yes, we have annual goals and we somehow need to tick them off. But if we only tick off our goals in research and early development, if we're chasing these things for the wrong reasons, as I said before, you know, it'll come back to haunt us. It will be short-lived. And I think one of my most important things I'm trying to drive overall is how can we come to a better and truly sustainable research and development machine? How can we do what we do faster, more successful, and truly sustainable? Because right now I would say our industry and even our company suffers from peak and trough. We have successes, but then we also have times where things get really, really difficult. And one of the challenges in our world is particular slow learning cycles. Because it takes a long time through testing, experimentation, human trials before I see the results of some of those hypotheses that I put out. So I want to accelerate this, bring it home. And I think this is also the dialogue to have with the teams. And we've just had that actually recently last week. In everything we do, to build in something where no matter what the outcome will be, we have learned something. And we've learned something for this molecule, for this biology, or for the programs that are at an earlier stage. What can we bring back? And I'm actually a great fan, to make it very specific, to set in place prospective criteria for success and failure. And you can actually make this quantitatively. You know, you get a green zone, you get a red zone, you get an amber zone where you need to think. And predefine before you even run the experiment what good will look like and what stopping the program will look like. And that is a real powerful hygiene, because it makes you think about what you want to achieve and what would also be not good. And then the secret is to hold yourself accountable to it when the moment comes. And we just had a live debate where we landed in the red space, but still we had some people arguing, but maybe we should still continue. And that is actually where I think then hygiene comes into place to say, but we agreed it's not a good place, so let's stop it. And so we did.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This is a really powerful. And I also get there's a sense, right? A lot of your vision is about the future, very future-based. So some of my questions is about, you know, how you actually lead your team and the organization into future. And the one particular thing nowadays, we can say it's a hype or trend, but it's also very important in reality. We have to deal with AI. Mm-hmm. So I would love to hear from you about some initiative you have spearheaded in that territory.
So first of all, we cannot predict the future, right? But what we can do is prepare ourselves. Exactly. And be prepared. And then I would say there are futures and multiverses, depending on which door we open, that will unfold. And I think it is really important then when we talk about leadership capabilities, but also capabilities of the people in, because who knows what is going to happen. And what we've did actually with my team over the last year is to say, well, no matter where this might be going, what will be last year is to say, well, no matter where this might be going, what will be the core skills? What will be the core elements of what we need to be doing, what we need to be good at to actually have a sustainable R&D in the future? And one thing we all aligned on is that we want to move to what we call a multi-language, or at least bilanguage model of our workforce. It's no longer sufficient to be a great scientist. You need to be a great scientist, but also be digitally savvy. And in some cases, I even start to talk about trilingual. It's digital, science, and entrepreneurship. Yeah. And then we actually start to talk about enterprise leadership. So you can open your lens, not just to manage down your own experiments, but actually to see what does that mean for the business. So we've sent actually thousands of our people through education and training to prepare them. We've also hired new people into our organization. And maybe just a short anecdote, if I may, when we touched on purpose early on, why would people join us from tech companies, Google, Microsoft, where frankly, if you live in the Bay Area, you know, you're well taken care of, to say the least. But most of them join us because of the purpose. They want to put their skills to work to make medicines and to serve people, and maybe not to be in an online sales distribution. And there's nothing wrong with this, but there's a personal choice in there. So anyway, training, education, getting prepared for the future, and then to start practice it. That was difficult. Yeah. I would say a difficult conversation, because people are scared. Will AI take the job away from me? And of course, we can't predict some of the things, but what we can say, if you are the master of some of those technologies, you know, we will work with the machine rather than against it. And I think we're coming to a place where we're seeing this coexistence and space where it will actually become at its best. At least that's what we hope for. So I think there's a space for human intelligence in this. Maybe one more element on future. It is also something, and we touched on global workforce. We are globally connected. So you also need to be appreciative that you have a global project team. You have different elements that are important to people in different cultures. So cultural awareness and appreciation of diversity and inclusion are real important elements for me actually to socialize and get sort of baselined in the business.
Yeah, thank you, Marcus. You know, especially on the very note, right? I know in some of your guiding principle and your leadership practice, I know that you put a lot of emphasis and you firmly believe in diversity and inclusion. So can you share some of your thoughts and practice on those?
So diverse teams are more innovative. There's data for this. But it's also, and sometimes also for a leader, it's sometimes harder to work with diverse teams because there are diverse opinions in there, right? And you need to integrate those. But fundamentally, you need to have the core belief that you get to better innovation level, you make better products, you know, by integrating diversity of thought. And that is really important for me. Diversity of thought, diversity of experience, diversity of background. And, you know, we can open that dialogue to all sorts of diversities. But for me, that is a fundamental principle. It's actually not even to be debated. Yeah. And then you need to implement it. And sometimes you need to have goals in this. Sometimes you encourage certain things in your organization. And that needs a level of energy. But once you actually get it going, we spoke earlier about building habits, it's actually then only a habit. But what you need to do as a leader, you need to both role model it and you need to make clear that it is important. So with my own leadership team, I actually went through a learning journey on diversity and inclusion, where we learned about our own personal biases, conscious and unconscious, our privileges, our actions, and how we're actually seen. I had a reverse mentor who reflected back on what he saw from me and what he felt was good or maybe not so good. So these were some very uncommon, and what he felt was good or maybe not so good. So these were some very uncomfortable learnings sometimes. But actually, I think each team member felt that was a major stepping stone for them to become also better leaders.
Let's also talk about another important dimension of a future leadership, because you talked about, you know, building the very diverse global team, and you yourself went through the learning journey yourself. So Marcus, if I have two folds of questions. One thing is that for yourself personally, when you look back your leadership journeys, what are some lessons you have learned? What are some actually lessons you have to unlearn?
Yeah, so I have grown up in a number of different corporate settings. I worked in a family-owned pharmaceutical company, in a NASDAQ-listed biotech, now at Novo Nordisk, which is foundation-owned, but still on the stock market. And that brings different dynamics, you know, to organizations, but to also what you're being held accountable for as a leader, how much you're allowed to have long-term and short-term thinking, how much, you know, my drive, my curiosity, my exploration spirit, my fascination with science is actually allowed to unfold and how it can shape this. What has always stayed with me is trying to be myself and to be authentic in how I show up, because I feel that at the end of the day builds trust. And I think the trust and the credibility, and we touched on this, as a leader are the fundamental pieces. And I think that has stayed for me actually throughout my entire journey. And it's sometimes hard when you change companies and people don't know you. How can they trust you? How can you gain their trust? How you deserve their trust? And that means you need to make very deliberate actions to say, okay, I'm not just talking about it, I'm actually also walking the talk. Yeah, and I think that is very, very important. One thing I had to come to realize, and I'm not sure it's unlearning, but realize, is that it's not enough to say things once. Yeah, in particular, as you're leading large organizations or organizations where people start to have different interpretations of what they think they're hearing. So you need to say it over and over again, and you need to be very clear on your intent and not just the word you have out there. So building feedback loops, you know, hearing back what, you know, does everybody actually understand where I would like to go with this? That was something I had to learn, I think, throughout the journey. And then finally, I now have the pleasure of working with an incredibly senior team. They're all very, very experienced leaders. So from leading individuals to leading leaders and now leading leaders of leaders, so to speak, is a totally different dimension. And then to unlearn the temptation sometimes to tell them how to do things because this is how I would do it, to hold back. And then to know, however, sometimes there is a place and an opportunity where you need to insert yourself. So speed and rhythm and being deliberate on when you become clear, right? And sometimes being very direct in your communication and guidance versus you let them just do the job. I think that is a very interesting, fascinating, but sometimes also difficult balance to hold.
Yeah. Thank you for inject a lot of hope for us, but we also appreciate your authenticity as well. So a lot of your sharing highlight the leadership lessons. If I may ask you to summarize a few tips, particularly for those scientific leaders who actually share the same goal of shaping future medicine, what would be your advice or tip for those future leaders?
So first of all, I think many of us scientists are driven by curiosity and fascination. And I think it's really important not to lose this. Sometimes the world is difficult and it's complex, but this is what actually keeps us going. And we are often in those organizations we're in as spearheading towards a future that we don't know how it's going to look like. So keep the faith. But at the same time, understand and absorb the business around you. There are lots of people who have good reasons to be more here in the moment, right? To be more concerned about maybe the financial performance of the company. So the level of enterprise leadership, awareness of the world around it, and doing science with the purpose to do something greater and better is certainly something that I have learned along the way. And then I would say one of the greatest gifts I have experienced is when you're not just leading the organization that is reporting to you, but you create followership. So people who actually like to follow you because you have a compelling value story and they trust you and they would like to work not just for you, but with you into the future. And once you achieve that, that is actually one of the best places you can be.
Thank you so much, Marcus. Thank you for your time and thank you for your inspiration. As I have been spending time with you, time always not enough. As you mentioned, Mo, time can be our currency, but time can be our enemy as well. But I know that this is just a very beginning of a journey. You actually indeed inspire us to be actually with you, and also there will be a lot of followers on this journey. So thank you very much.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.